Yiftach is one story, and now we move into the mini Shoftim. So we saw two mini Shoftim before Yiftach, right? We saw Yair was the second one of them. Tola, thank you. We had Tola, and we had Yair, and now we're going to see Ivtzan, Elon, and Avdon. And what better time to go into Ivtzan, right, than with Shua's coming? Why? Why do I say that? Because the Medrash said Ivtzan is Boaz. Why they say he's Boaz, we have to see. There are certain common elements in all of these mini Shofet stories. When I say mini Shofet, what I mean is not like what we saw with Shamgar, right? Shamgar had one pasuk in his name in the end of the third perek of Shoftim, but at least there we had a story. He took a cattle goat and he killed 600 Plishtim with it, right? So we knew what he had done. In these cases, we know nothing of the events of their lifetime. What we will find is where they lived, how long they served, where they were buried. They all have the word Vayishvot. And there are no stories about what they did. With two of them, Yair before, and Ivtzan, as we'll see, actually three of them, and Avdon, we'll find out they had a lot of kids, and they had great wealth. So with three of them, we find out that. We don't know what enemy they fought, if any. We don't know, you know, what they said. We don't know what their mechanism was. We're missing a lot of information about who they are. And that leads to the question of, why are these Shoftim treated differently? Why are they not listed the way that the other Shoftim are? So I looked high and low, trying to find somebody who would say something to explain this, and didn't really find anything. I finally turned to Professor Yechezkel Kaufman. Professor Yechezkel Kaufman was a professor in Hebrew U, middle 20th century, wrote prolifically, and was involved with the scholars of Tanakh in that period in Israel. Some of the things he says probably would not be acceptable in a traditional look at Tanakh, but some of the things that he says are not, you know, particularly problematic. You know, he relies on the evidence of history, archaeology. That's what he's looking to for his points. And I find him to be relatively conservative, small c, in his approach. So he quotes a view that he doesn't like first. This is in his work, Sefer Shoftim, which is a good name for a book on Shoftim. Just call it Sefer Shoftim. It's good, because people come to the bookstore and they say, I'd like to buy a Sefer Shoftim, and they get, you know, your book. So he quotes a view that suggests that actually there were two different kinds of Shoftim. He doesn't like this view, but he suggests it, he mentions it, that there were Shoftim who were charismatic leaders who, you know, their job was to save people from a particular enemy in a particular region at a particular time. And then you had people who were just teachers of Judaism. And they weren't involved in wars. They were national figures as opposed to being regional. And that's what you're getting here with these five. Are people who had that national teaching role, and the reason it doesn't mention any wars is because that's not what they did. That wasn't their job. There were two different tracks. But their argument is, those who take this view, that there were people like this all along. You had the regionals, and you had the national teachers. He doesn't like that idea for a few reasons. Number one, why is it that Yiftach is plunked into the middle of this group of five then? These are our five mini Shoftim. Why do you record two, then Yiftach, and then three more? The chronology sounds like they're part of the years for the entire thing. So he doesn't like that. And also, there were big Shoftim who were judges. Devorah, it says that he Shoftas Yisrael, right? She judged. She wasn't just, you know, involved in that big war. Not to mention, he says, the accounts are not all that different from those of the big Shoftim. I mean, with the big Shoftim, we also find about their years, and we find their kids, and we find where they're buried. So his answer, which really is the same answer that I find anywhere I can find someone who actually addresses this at all, is to suggest that Shmuel is the recorder of, he's credited with canonizing the book, but each Shofet's events are told over by people in their time, and that's how it gets to Shmuel. We don't assume that Shmuel has a nevuah about this entire period of history, and he's recording nevuah. He has nevuah. Shmuel's a Navi. That's his last name. But he is recording what the tradition is from these different Shoftim. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe not. Now I'm actually not sure. In other words, what he's contending is that in the time of Tola, that's what they chose to write down. In the time of Yiftach, this is what they chose to write down, and then it's all canonized at the end. But I'm not sure you can actually say that. Meaning, maybe Shmuel is writing the whole thing with, you know, Nevuah about this 400-year period. Maybe not. So maybe that's a different take.
But
so
before,
yeah.
Sorry, chronologically. Do we know that?
Well, we know that everybody who reads this era tries to read the chronology and say, add this year, this year, this year, and this year, and that's how we get where we're going. And remember that we saw the business of the 300 years that Yiftach said it had been since they took Amon's land, and the Mefarshim all try to figure out how can we make this work to 300, what needs to be massaged in order to make that actually happen.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because the last two Prekim are not in order. So you'll tell us
the last two stories.
Last two stories, I'm sorry.
Correct.
They fit in. So is it possible they fit in between here, or is it before or after?
Well, that's an interesting question. That I don't know. That I'm not sure of. We'll have to see what we get there. We'll have to figure that out. But that's, you have these many Shoftim here, whether it's because that's what people chose to emphasize, whether it's that's the nature of Shmuel's Nevuah, whether it's because they were actually functioning in a different capacity, this in the end is what we have. So the first of them is indeed Ibtzan. Take a look, please, Perek Yud Bet Pasuk Chet. Vayishpot acharav es Yisrael Ibtzan mi beis lachem. After him being Yiftach, Ibtzan from Beit Lachem. Vayilo shloshim banim, he had 30 sons. Ushloshim banot shilach hachutza, and 30 daughters he married off. Ushloshim banos hevi levanav minachutz, and he brought 30 girls to marry his 30 sons from the outside. In other words, he successfully married off all 60 kids. You can understand why you'd want that in Tanakh. You know, that's an achievement.
That's a really impressive
thing.
And you know what? No, but Diane's point is valid here. None of them killed any of the others. None of them evicted any of the others. You know, this is achievement. Wait till you get to the Medrash, though.
His youngest one. His youngest one was...
What about
assuming the Boaz connection? It's Oved.
Yeah.
So is that's part of the?
So the answer is he's not in the 60.
Yeah.
Right.
He's not in the 60. As we'll see. The Vayishpodis Yisrael. Sorry.
He sends him a chutzah. Where is a chutzah?
So the usual take of hachutza and of the bringing from the outside just means. Not, it wasn't this practice of, you know, we're going to marry everybody within immediate family, but from other Shvatim and so on.
Not out of the faith.
Correct. I did see somebody who wanted to say that it was outside, and to read Ibsen as a bad guy, but I don't see anything supporting it in the text.
What do they say with Dina?
What do you mean?
Dina goes out. What's the word there?
It doesn't. It says about Tetzei, Dina, about there's no chutz. No. So Vayishpot Yisrael Shava Shanim, he judges Israel for 7 years, Vayamas Ivtzan, and his son dies, Vayikaver Beit Lachem, and he's buried in Beit Lachem.
Is that why they say him? Because he's Beit Lachem?
So, no, so that's what we have to talk about now. That's what we have to talk about. But first before that, which Beit Lachem is it? Yes, there is. There is a Beit Lachem which we saw in Yehoshua Perek Yutet, which is in Zebulun. And the reason why it's particularly interesting is if you jump for a second to the next Shofet in Pasuk Yud Aleph, he is Zebuloni. He's from Zebulun. So that Mikra suggests that that actually this is Zebulun, and the Beit Lechem that we're talking about, that's the Beit Lechem in Zebulun, just like what's coming next.
But then it's not that.
It's not the rooster.
Well,
it's
correct.
The great lamb and your dove.
Correct. Correct.
I think you could say the opposite. If the other guy says he's from Zvooloon and this guy doesn't say, so then yeah. It would be the other.
And that's what I thought also.
You know what I mean?
I was not impressed by this explanation. The Gemara that we're going to see is that's going to say his son is Boaz clearly believes that it's Beit Lechem in Yehuda, as does Josephus for whatever it's worth in the fifth book of Antiquities. He says it's Yehuda, and Kaufman says it's Yehuda, and I brought him here on the sheet number 6. I didn't translate it because I wanted to get everything in on the sheet, and that was the only way I could do it. So he's not. He was the one who didn't get translated. I apologize. Amru Razal. I'm sorry, no, that's next. That's Radak. Radak Yisrael. Number 6. Mikevan shemiyad achrei ivtzan nizkar shofet beferush bechinoi hazvuloni. He says, since right after ivtzan is going to be a shofet with the name of Zvulun, umesuparshnik bar be'eretz Zvulun, it's even going to say that he was buried in the land of Zvulun. Yesh lahaniach, we really could assume sheivtzan lo haya Zvuloni. Right? You could assume ivtzan was not of Zvulun, like Alina said, because... You know, when he is a Zvulun, you say so. V'sheiro haya Beit Lechem Yehuda. Hamafur semet yotem and hazvuloni. Then he says his city was Beit Lechem Yehuda, which is the one we know about. Granted that in Rus it says Beit Lechem Yehuda, nonetheless. I could come up with reasons why it says Beit Lechem Yehuda there, because there it's talking about coming from Moab, and it's talking about having gone from Moab into Judea. That you can give other answers. Hachokrim einam notim lekach. He says the scholars don't agree with me. Mibnei sheinichu halacha dogmatit. Shehuda haya bizman hahu nivdal mishar shvatim. He says the reason why is because they have this dogmatic assumption that Yehuda did not function as part of the Jewish people at this stage, but they were already sort of their own kingdom, separate from the other tribes. He says that's what the scholars think, and therefore... they want to say that that he would have been not in Yehuda, it would have been known as Judea, it's a separate entity, and what's going on in Shoftim is going on in the north. And so you'll immediately challenge and say, but what are you talking about? We had Othniel ben Kenaz, who was in Yehuda. So he says, yeah, v'gamat ha-tipur al-Othniel heimroim kamsa ashel ha-orech. He says they think the story of Othniel was an editor's interpolation. It doesn't actually belong here. He says b'chol zeh ein lo yisod, but there's no foundation for any of this. He doesn't believe it. He thinks it's Beit Lechem Yehuda, which, as I said, fits with the idea that Yitzhak is Boaz, which we're going to come back to.
But all the other guys are from the north, right? Yitzhak was, you know, they're all from the north. You know, the next two guys are from the north, so that's why it would fit.
But no, the Shoftim that we're familiar with are either north or east.
I'm just saying one's near him, right?
Yeah,
now.
No, that's true.
From now, these are now national versus regional leaders?
If you take that view, which I don't necessarily adopt, and Calvin certainly doesn't adopt. The other big thing that jumps out here is the emphasis on the marriages. Yeah. Right? Before we get to the Boaz discussion. But what's with all the marriages? I mean, what's with the marriages is you have kids, you have to marry them off. But why do I need to know this? Bless you. So that's one approach. That's
I feel like God was working. He was a good man, and he was able to punch it up for his kids, like as a
believer. Yeah, he respected, or he could have contacts in lots of different places.
Right. So take a look at Radak in source number 7. Radak says, Amru Razal, right, the sages said, actually, you know what, I'm not going to say it inside yet because I don't want to jump in. Most of what he's going to talk about is going to be the Boaz Association. I'm not ready yet. But he does have a line in it. Actually, you know what, go to the bottom. One line up from the bottom, the beginning of the line, Ulufi Derech HaPshat in the Hebrew. In the English... You want according to Pshat in the middle of the English, the end, last bit of the third line. Ulvi derech hapshat, as opposed to the midrashic association with Boaz, sibra kasev nisuei banav ubanosav l'saper ha'atzlacha gedola shahisela v'banem ubanos. The reason why it talked about marrying off his kids was to speak of his great success with his sons and daughters. Kikulam hisi yam b'chayav. He managed to marry them all off while alive. ube'emes hayubo dvarim tovim, and there must have been good things about him. Asher bischaram higil zos ha'atzlacha, such that he merited this kind of success. Ulamala gedola liyoso shofet Yisrael, and to this great level of being a shofet.
So could have also just said, and he was a good man, or a successful man.
Yeah, but isn't it the visual, stronger?
How long did people live at this time?
We don't know of them being superannuated.
Are we talking about 100 years old, 50 years old?
We don't know. Right. Unless they tell you specifically how old they were, which we're not getting here, I have no idea.
Didn't they say in Megillat Shmuel that Boaz was 80 years old when he met
me? There is such a medrash, yes.
80.
Yeah, but that story is going to get more challenging. Don't worry. But the view that Radak proposes is a very interesting view, right? Radak says if he succeeded in life, it must be because God helped him. Yeah, that goes back to something that we've talked about off and on over the years, this prosperity theology idea. The idea that if you're doing well, it's a sign God likes you. That's very insulting to a lot of people.
Wasn't that Yitzhak's argument? I won the war.
Yeah.
God is on my side.
God must be on my side, yeah. Except that there, at least he could say God did it for the people. It's a little humbler.
That's like anti-Christian. If you're suffering, if you're poor, like you're more pious.
Except that prosperity theology actually began with the Protestant Church. Yeah. No, you're right. There are within Christianity, there are groups that label this heretical. We have it as a yes and no. In the sense that we have the Gemara that talks about righteous people as being, attractive. Right? Esther, Rachel, Sarah, they're all described as being attractive. Yosef, Moshe is described as being super strong. Yaakov is described as being super strong. There's this notion that righteousness on the inside, perfection on the inside, is somehow going to be reflected in perfection on the outside. At the same time, we have an awful lot that speaks against this. And it seems to be, not in line with our standard, way of looking at the world. You have to recognize it because Radak is clearly taking that view here. But it's difficult. And by the way, it's going to come up for Avdon, the last of them, and he shoved him as well. He's also going to have a lot of kids, and he's going to marry them off. But that's one approach. Another approach is Abarbanel. And he takes the exact opposite approach because his name is Abarbanel. In source number 8, V'zachar ha'kasuv ha'sipur hazeh. You want to know why the story mentioned this? Lo'odia she'galgal hu she'chozer ba'olam. To show that it's all a wheel that goes around and around. Ki hine yiftach lo ha'yelokim bas achas yechida v'lo zachsa she'leshetina hazeh. Yiftach had just one daughter, and she didn't actually merit to get married. And again, whose fault is that? Ki mipnei neder avia nish'eres mikudesh es l'ashem v'ish lo yida'a, because of her father's vow, and so on. The Yitzan, Sheshafat Yisrael Acharav, Yitzan is the very next shofet. Hayelo shloshim banim u'shloshim banos v'zachah l'shenasa es kulam b'chayav. He's got all these kids and he marries them all off. So Abarbanel says just the opposite. The message here is, you win some, you lose some. It's not about how great you are or how not great you are. This is just the way the world works. The other approach, though, which neither of them brought, but I think is worth noting, is that maybe this is meant to demonstrate influence. He had 30 sons, and he brought in women from other tribes to marry them. He had 30 daughters, and he had them marry men from elsewhere. It's like Shades of Shlomo HaMelech, right? The idea of creating political marriages, which helps solidify the influence. And maybe that's why we're bringing it here, in order to emphasize what his MO was. This is who he was as a shofet.
We don't know if he was from Yehuda or from some other tribe. Doesn't give us a clue.
Correct. Correct. So that is basically what we know about him, but we still have to talk about this Boaz business. And it's not simple, and it's not straightforward, and we're not going to finish it today. But we're going to have to talk about what this association is with Boaz. no point in starting. We have like a minute, right? What time is it?
3 minutes.
Well, what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to make the association of Ibzan with Boaz. So what we're going to have to do is ask the question of where's the evidence? Why are we doing it? And already some of you have noted the Beit Lehem idea, but I think it's a stronger element than that. But then we're going to get this really strange story regarding the marriages. The marriages are going to come back into this. And so we're going to have to see what the Gemara does with this, and how they understand the message of the marriages of his kids. Sorry?
Also his age, right?
Yes, well, the age is definitely going to be part of this too. All right, so we'll pick up with that, God willing, next week.